Hello and welcome to the Oxford Internet Institute podcast, part of the University of Oxford. In each episode, we look at issues and developments in the digital world that matter to us all. Today, we're joined by Dr. Fabian Braisman and Professor Paul X. McCarthy. Fabian is a departmental research lecturer in AI and work at the OII. His research focuses on the science of success. He uses data science methods to quantify the determinants of success in different fields of work. Paul is a CEO, computational social science research leader, and author. He founded the League of Scholars and is also adjunct professor at the University of New South Wales in Sydney, as well as an industry fellow at the UTS Data Science Institute and an honorary fellow at Western Sydney University. I'm Veena McCool, Media and Communications Manager at the OII. Welcome to the podcast, Fabian and Paul. Thank you so much for joining us.
A lot.
Thanks, Lena.
Paul, it would be great to start with you. What prompted you to research the impact of founder personalities on startup success through the Science of Startups Initiative?
We've been working on related questions for about a decade, looking at what drives the success of high growth firms. In a previous role, I worked for CSIRO, Australia's science agency, and we were looking at high growth firms known as gazelles, these firms that grow very rapidly. And we recognize that these are responsible for most new net jobs. So there's a huge driver. Startups and high growth firms are very important economically. But at the same time, we recognize that there's a very high failure rate. So most new startups fail. And so we're interested in trying to understand what makes them succeed. There was also some other background research we did a number of years ago looking at personality and how it relates to occupational success. And this provided sort of a background story to this current work we've been working on. I should say we've been working on this project for about 4 years now, so developing various aspects of it. And so the previous literature in this area looks at a lot of external factors like industry location and funding, but it's tended to overlook team-centric factors like the personality of the founders. Our hunch was that that's a really important factor and it may be the most important factor. And so we wanted to put that to the test in a quantitative fashion. So that's sort of how we got to where we were. And I came across Fabian and some of his colleagues at Oxford that were doing a lot of work in the labour market, and we really saw eye to eye on the sort of quantitative approach and the use of machine learning and data science to try and tackle some of these questions and explore them in a kind of an economics framework. And so that sort of we hit it off pretty straight away, and then we started working in this area.
Brilliant. And Fabian, how do you define a successful startup in the context of your work?
Thank you, Wiener, for the question. Yeah, following up on what Paul just said, success is an abstract metric, an abstract measure to look at in general in various aspects of life, as every one of us can tell, be it success in sport, be it success in romantic life, be it success in a business environment. It's all quite fuzzy to measure this whole thing. So, how do we define it then in the business context? There is various metrics you could look at. When we think of a company, obviously, if we were to think of a bigger company that is maybe listed on the stock exchange, we would think of maybe the stock market value or how does it perform. We could think of profits or revenue and all these kinds of financial metrics. However, with startups, most of these data points are not available. So we have to go for something simpler, something straightforward, and something that is uniquely measurable. So what we looked at is a combination of acquisition or IPO. So we define a company, startup company, as being successful if it either had an IPO, if it acquired a company, or was acquired. We are obviously very well aware this is not necessarily always the best metric of success, and that we are ignoring many, many other aspects of success as well. Obviously, a company that can bootstrap itself without any venture capital funding and is profitable in the long run, this is surely a successful company. However, the reason we went for that is mostly a data limitation. On these platforms, that we looked at to study startup success. There's a couple of these platforms out there, PitchBook, Crunchbase, and others. Oftentimes, the company is registered and then it stays on that platform forever. And an event like IPO or acquisition will definitely be registered there. It's well known. It's something that it makes news within the startup world. So we would certainly have that metric. So if it's out there, it would be recorded. However, other things are not necessarily recorded. Most importantly, failure is not necessarily on there in a company went down, because once these companies are registered, they are not necessarily going away from these platforms. And there's obviously other metrics of success within the startup world. Oftentimes, it is being looked at whether companies are able to form a successful business model that is a value proposition or some kind of pitch deck in a very early stage, or towards the longer run, different venture capital funding rounds. However, this is more promise of future success than actual success. And this is why we went for that clear-cut exit metric.
Okay, so acknowledging that exits, acquisitions, IPOs are one marker of success that's easiest to kind of track rather than that being the sole determinant of success. Paul, going back to you, I'm interested in what you shared earlier about your feeling that the personality traits of successful founding teams were often overlooked in research. How does personality impact startup success, and what kind of traits should one look for in a future co-founder? I'm curious if there's a specific kind of personality that maybe we see examples of in popular culture that might also be ideal.
Yeah, so we looked at the personality features of 21,000 startups worldwide. We used Crunchbase as a source, which is the largest and most definitive source of startup data in the world. And what we did is we took the Twitter streams of the Twitter or X streams of the founders of those companies where they were posting publicly. And we use computational linguistics to infer the personality traits of those that were active on Twitter. This is not new science. It's quite an established methodology. And with a large number of tweets, if you're a CEO or a co-founder of a company and you're posting a lot publicly, you can get a pretty good kind of 30-dimensional profile in using the Big Five personality framework, which is the most established and robust personality framework in the positive psychology space. And so when we did this, we looked at all of these companies. We found the first finding was that co-founders of startups are very different to successful employees. So leveraging data from a previous study where we looked at employees across thousands of different occupations, we took 120 of those occupations in a whole variety of industries, and we compared successful people in those roles to entrepreneurs, and we found the personalities were remarkably different. So much so that we could train a predictor to distinguish or sort the successful employees from the successful entrepreneurs with over 80% accuracy using the personality feature data alone. But then when we drilled down a bit further, we found that there wasn't one profile, if you like, or one set of personality features that that characterized successful startup founders. Instead, there were six. So there were six different types. But there were some features that were common to all, and that were the key 10 features were statistically significant, and they included adventurousness, so that's a feature of openness, low modesty, in other words, a form of confidence, and high activity levels or energy, exuberance. But we're now starting to understand that when I presented these findings to a colleague, they sort of said, half jokingly, "So you found the kind of personality formula of successful startup founders. Isn't that the sort of formula for narcissism or for your megalomania, that sort of thing?" And I think what we've realized is that there are some of those features, for example, low modesty or this high degree of self-confidence, But it's in tandem with a high degree of trust, for example. At the same time, they have a high degree of trust, which means they trust others, which is not a common feature of narcissists. So it's someone who has confidence but is also working very collaboratively and is able to delegate authority, which is so important in a startup. Going further than that, we found that there were also different combinations within teams of personalities too. So we found that there were complementarities between the six different types. So many successful startup teams include what we call developers, which are creative technical geniuses, alongside charismatic leaders who are often perform the CEO role. And we're starting to realize now that these combinations of different personality types within the foundation team could also relate to different types of startups. So some startups are more technical, some have more a business model focus, and some are trying to innovate or disrupt an entire industry. So they have different types of combinations.
Really interesting to hear how there are differences in ideal employees versus ideal founders. Fabian, what specific analytics do you use to predict success in your research?
Yeah, thank you very much for the question. So as Paul just pointed out, there's a whole multitude of factors that are all playing out together within a startup. The different roles, the different personalities, the sector the company is working in, all of that is playing a role. And what we try to do is we try to bring it together. We call it the ensemble theory of success. So we came up with one statistical model that tries to capture all these different data points. But what was very important for us is that we only considered information that was available when the company was founded, because we wanted to mimic the situation that we are, let's say, a very, very early stage investor. We invest on the day the company is founded, so there's no information whatsoever about how they are doing. And this was important for us because otherwise we would have implicitly taken into consideration some of the data points that would have only come about as the company proceeds. Obviously, it is quite clear that the fact whether a venture capital company might have invested or there was some angel investment, that all of this is a strong predictor of success. In people believe in the company, people invest in the company, and then they might get access to different networks. So we ignored all of that. And if we were to take the analogy of human life, we predicted life expectancy on the day this baby was born. So we only looked at the company by the day of its foundation, and we tried to predict what would happen in the future. So would the company become successful or not? And obviously, another factor in the startup world is that not all industries, not all countries have necessarily the same startup ecosystem or are that much driven by venture capital-oriented exit metrics. So there's some countries in the world where there is just more venture capital available. So this might be the more mature markets, if we think of the US, Silicon Valley, most importantly, obviously. So in these kind of areas, in these kind of markets, you can expect that there is already more of a focus towards exits. And the same goes for different industries. There's those industries where there's a lot of VC money needed. So those will also be the ones where we have more exits. We took into consideration is the country where the company was founded, the industry in which it was active, as well as the time when the company was founded, to better understand the business cycle we're looking at. Because obviously, a company that was founded in the 90s looked at a very different business environment than a company that was founded maybe in the year 2015 or something like that. So all of these control factors were in there. But then most importantly, we took into consideration the founder factors that Paul just mentioned. So we looked at the number of founders. Obviously, the idea being that the more founders you have, the better, hopefully, you could address the different skills that you need, the different requirements that you would have in a startup. But on top of all of that, we also included the personality traits. And what we found is that indeed, even though we control for everything else, personality still plays a role. And in what way does it play a role? It is not that if you have more founders that are all the same personality, that they would perform better, but rather if you have different personality teams. So if the three of us were to start a company, you, Wiener, would be type A, I would be type B, and Paul would be type C. That would be ideal for our startup company. And actually, what came out of all of this is that our model is not that bad in predicting startup success. Obviously, it's not perfect because there's so many things that play into that. But compared to the baseline model, our prediction model outperformed that by over 200%. To give you one example, so if we were to draw 100 eventually successful companies just randomly from all the startup companies in our data set, as Paul already said, we looked at more than 21,000 companies in total. So if we were to pick 100 random successful companies without any metric to it, the prediction model that is the industry standard would find 15 out of those 100, while our model would find 36 out of 100. So definitely a significant improvement. And if you think about it, what kind of simple model it is in terms of the data points we looked at, all being available by the day of company foundation, I think this is quite staggering and quite astonishing that personality still plays a role to such a big extent.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I'm now curious about the intangible factors. Fabian talked a lot about the things that we can measure and the information that's out there after a company has been founded. But Paul, how about intangible factors that are a little harder to quantify? I'm thinking about things like innovation and creativity.
Yeah, innovation and creativity are key, obviously. And we've found, I think, that many of these things through our previous research, where we looked at occupation success and personality, we looked at 100,000 people in 3,000 different occupations, and we found that there was an incredible correlation between the personality features of people in the same job and their personality features. So much so that when we first got the results, we thought there was a mistake. I thought there must have been a mistake. And we looked at, for example, the world's top tennis players and the world's top software developers, about 200 of each. And we found that the tennis players were all very similar to one another in their personality features. But very unlike the software developers, and the software developers were quite similar to one another. And one of the things that software developers share with scientists and indeed artists is that they're very high on the dimension, the personality dimension of openness. That means they're willing to explore and contemplate new ideas, they're open to new experiences. And that's kind of like makes sense intuitively when you think about the innovation sort of side or creativity side, because being in a startup is very much like being in an improvisational theater troupe. It's very, very dynamic. And in fact, this idea, this feature of adventurousness, it sounds like there's a risk aspect, which there is. I mean, it is about appetite for risk. But when you drill into it, it's really a preference for novelty as well. So we have these innate preferences. I sort of think about personality as being a bit like our operating system. It's a bit like a personal operating system, and it's the lens through which we kind of see the world and the way in which we prefer to engage with the world. There's no necessarily right or wrong, personality features. It's just a way of kind of seeing the world and adventurousness. So some people are will prefer to do the same thing repeatedly and master, and they have a preference for mastery and repetition. And you see this with elite athletes. So if you want to be one of the world's top tennis players, for example, you need to be prepared to do the same thing day in, day out, and perfect that capability. Whereas in entrepreneurship, and this applies to a lot of the creative fields like art and science as well, they have a preference for not doing the same thing twice. I mean, so much so that I've seen software developers who will spend a whole week trying to automate something rather than do it twice. It could have taken 20 minutes, but it'll take a week to write the code. So there's this real, and it's a, this tendency to look for new terrain, and so Yeah, so that's some of the sort of intangible things that we see. I think the adventurousness thing too, we've noted there's a correlation between real world adventure and a lot of startup CEOs and founders. So Richard Branson, for example, very famously is into adventure sports, and but there's a lot of other contemporary founders. The founders of Canva, they're very successful graphic design product from Australia. Are famous for their kite surfing. The so safety culture founder Luca Neer, who's on our advisory group, is a keen rally driver, and so on.
Wow, really interesting to hear about all those other intangibles and different qualities outside of the standard personality metrics. Fabian, I wonder if you have any insights from your research about what makes startups unsuccessful or why companies fail.
Thanks a lot, Vina. This is the natural mirror, I think, the mirror side of what we have been talking so far about. So we've been talking a lot about success factors, be it on the personal side or be it on the business side. And obviously, we all know most startups fail. Most startups company are not successful. Again, you would be surprised how difficult it is to find numbers to that statement, even though everyone knows it. And everyone is saying things like 75% of all startups fail and 90% of all products fail. It is really hard to find numbers to that. And I think this is also pointing us to the limitation we already talked about it very briefly. So why have we not explicitly modeled that on the data front? It is really hard to get that data on failure. I think failure is also more difficult to conceptualize in, we talked about success metrics. You look at an exit or profitability or whatever that might be, but failure is more difficult to measure. And one reason why it's so difficult to measure is because failure, so the opposite of success, oftentimes is actually the prerequirement for later success. So I would also not want to study it in like, okay, here are the successful founders, here are the successful companies, and here are all the failed ones. Because we don't know, maybe it's actually that failure will lead to later success. There's really interesting research on that, which studied the dynamics between failure and success in different disciplines that partly had to do with entrepreneurship. So one angle of that was on startup foundations, so serial entrepreneurs that would start the first company, the second company, and so on until eventually they were successful. They looked into researchers that would go for grant applications for research support. And the third group was terrorist groups and trying to commit one big terrorist attack. And what they showed is that from the second trial onwards, in all these different aspects, good or bad, you can already distinguish eventual winners, eventual successful groups of people from those who will not be successful. So there seems to be a certain dynamic that once you failed, if you then go about it again, so if you try a second time, things will start to look differently. And this is one reason why we haven't looked into failure as the opposite of success yet. So I personally also consider it as possibly the prerequirement for later success, as everyone can probably tell from our own individual lives. And in the startup world, this is quite natural, right? You start with your first idea, and that first idea might not be as mature as you thought, or you might have just not had such a good understanding of how the startup ecosystem, the startup world looks like. And then you abandon that idea at some point and you start again, maybe with a better team where you have better personality combination, as Paul pointed out, and then the whole thing starts to take off. Paul, do you also have
Absolutely.
something on that? Sorry.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's right. There's two things here, isn't there? One is that it's really hard to say when something is. It's easy to say when something has been successful because we've got these clear external extrinsic measures, if you like. But to say something has failed, it's kind of like there's no such thing as bad poetry. You just ran out of time, you know. But I think there's also another thing that attracts me to the success approach, and that's kind of like we're working within this area of positive psychology, and where one of our key co-authors in this area, Peggy Kern, has worked with Martin Seligman and some of the founders of the positive psychology movement, and they've basically turned psychology on its head. So for the last 100 years, I think it's been looking at dysfunction, failure, and trauma, and trying to understand that to better people's lives. But about 20 to 30 years ago, there was a bunch of people who got together and said, "Well, why don't we look at it from a different perspective and try and understand what are the factors that are associated with harmonious relationships with happy people and people that escape these sort of difficulties, and what can we learn from that?" And I sort of think this is the same. There's an analogy here with startups. I'm a big fan of Tolstoy and that sort of idea, the Anna Karenina principle, that there's a similarity between happy families, but dysfunction comes in many flavors. And I think that's the same with startups too. There are things you can learn by understanding failure, and usually that's best learned through your own experience. And you see that with founders that fail and then later succeed. But I think there's also a lot to be learned by studying the very few people who manage to get through and create these incredible companies. So that's sort of our approach.
The broader sort of startup ecosystem, how do your research findings affect the likes of venture capitalists and investors? Paul, maybe we can start with you.
Yeah, well, I guess venture capitalists are in a high risk, high return business in a portfolio game. So they've got a portfolio of companies, some of which they want to get very outsized returns, and the majority of which they know will be likely unsuccessful. They might lose their money. So they're looking for really big outcomes. It's not like traditional business investing or loan, like traditional bank loans, where it's more about a surety that the loans are going to be repaid. You're looking for something special, these kind of out of the park things. So I think this idea that a significant factor has been overlooked, or more likely, I think that the most successful venture capital investors are already taking personality into account through their own know-how and experience, but it's not sort of, explicitly there.
And Fabian, now that we've talked about how this applies to the broader ecosystem, so VCs and investors, how failure can be kind of difficult to define in concrete terms, what are the gaps that have emerged here? So what haven't you yet explored through your research that you're interested in finding out more about when it comes to what makes startups flourish?
Yes, this is a really good question. So obviously, our analysis, as Paul pointed out, has been a 2-year research project which was published in October 2023. And since then, we have established what is called the Science of Startups Initiative, a research project here at the Oxford Internet Institute in collaboration with Paul and his peers from Australia. And we have set ourselves an ambitious agenda to really start filling some of the gaps, some of the question mark that our research pointed towards. As I said a bit earlier, so we really only looked at prediction of companies from the day they were founded until the very end. So the kind of human life analogy from birth to death, and we ignored the whole lifespan of everything that happened in between. And this is really pointing toward the gap we are having here. So everything that is happening in the meantime is an open question still. Obviously, there's a lot of research out there on VCs, on startups, oftentimes from an entrepreneurial or from a managerial angle, but not that much from the research angle we're looking at it, that is from the computational social sciences or from the data science angle. So really trying to do all of that in a quantitative and large scale basis. So a number of follow-up projects we are working on are those. So on one hand, we are trying to understand what is the effect of incubators. So often startups go through some sort of structured program, be it an accelerator, an incubator, a VC, or anything else that could happen. There's lots of interventions. It's not only funding being provided, like the nourishing and flourishing and really the education and the raising of that kid, which is the early stage company, but everything that is being provided. And it's not quite clear yet what the effect of these different metrics are. Also, there might be feedback effects between all of those. And this is pointing us to the second important research question we are having, namely the effect of the ecosystem itself. So there's Usually, you wouldn't talk of local ecosystems on the city level. You might have Boston, Berlin, Bangalore, and all these different places. And they all bring in their own DNA, their own fingerprint. And it is not yet understood, first of all, how do these different ecosystems actually differ? We're not just talking in the number of startup companies or the amount of venture capital funding being available, but all the different roles and events that are taking place. Often, times you can imagine some of these places have really good higher education institutions, but at the same time, not all of them have such a big tech ecosystem or have that many tech startups coming out of it. In London, for example, you have the city, so you have really good access to financial capital. But does this necessarily mean that we will have as many tech companies as in other places? So there's various factors, including all the feedback. And what we're trying to do is bring all that about. So first of all, mapping these ecosystems, trying to understand how the fingerprints actually differ. And then based on these factors, on top of what we already did before, trying to predict startup success at a large scale to provide really actionable insights for policymakers and managers of startup ecosystems to understand what are the buttons that they need to press in order to bring about more startup success.
I love what you mentioned there about ecosystems and taking into account the broader considerations associated with the environments and the incubators in which startups may grow. Paul, it'd be good to finish with you to understand what's on the horizon for this research project in the coming year. How do you plan to build on your work thus far in the Science of Startups project?
We think there's some really valuable lessons that we've learned, in the startup space here that can be applied in a variety of different contexts. So there's sort of three areas in particular that we're actively exploring. One is, are there other features at the company level, in particular, gender and cultural diversity, within the team? How does that play out in terms of success? Especially women in startups. Women in startups have had a long history of discrimination in terms of funding for women co-founded startups. That's changing very rapidly, and it would be really interesting to understand what success looks like for women co-founded companies. We're also looking at the corporate context. Our hypothesis is that they're in the same way that we found a kind of a typology of co-founders of startup companies with six different startup company type founders. We think that will be a similar thing for the C-suite. It'll be really interesting to sort of see, when we get to do that work, what the typology of C-suite sort of executives are. And I suspect what we'll find here is there's possibly a different type of CEO for the hour, if you like, so that at different times, different stages of organizational growth might call for different types of leadership. And lastly, and this is a project where just I'm delighted to say it's about to be published soon. We'll have a preprint out soon. We're looking at the larger scale. We're going up to the economy-wide level. We're exploring this kind of somewhat counterintuitive and perhaps outrageous idea of exploring personality diversity at a national level. So we've come up with an index using personality data from the world's largest gold standard personality survey. It's a survey of about 700,000 people worldwide that's been done over the last 3 or 4 decades. And quite generously, Dr. John Johnson at Penn State University in the US is custodian of this data. He's been gathering this data from countries all around the world over the last 30 or 40 years. He's generously shared that with us, and we have done this analysis, and we developed this new index. We're working with Professor Richard Holden, who's a senior economist here in Australia, and we're exploring how does personality diversity relate to national income and national income growth, so GDP and GDP growth. And we're seeing some very interesting early results, which shows that there's very clear relationships between personality diversity and a country's economic success. And there's kind of an intuitive logic here. You've got to sort of take the startup study and you say that, well, there's certain roles within a startup, but within an economy, you can imagine there's a broader range, but you're still going to need a variety of different roles, which are going to be suited to people with different outlooks and personalities. So that's pretty exciting. So that's sort of one of the things we're working on.
Sounds like a lot of exciting progress to come. Both of you, thank you so much for your time today. It's been fascinating to explore the world of startup success with you. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in to this episode of the OII podcast. If you've enjoyed it, please leave us a review and share the link to this episode with your network. We'll be back soon with more conversations about the digital world. Take care.